are signs everywhere. I'm standing in the supermarket, see? And, you know, they have these supermarket house organs. It's kind of like, I guess it's a house organ for boredom, I suspect. You know, like Today's Woman, Family Circle. You know, those magazines that the supermarkets put out. I guess it is a house organ for kind of, not boredom, really. It's true. In a sense, it's dynamic ennui. It's very different from boredom, though. Dynamic ennui feels like any minute now you can bust out if the roast really works out this time. And bust out into that wonderful world of beautiful light. And I'm standing there by the checkout counter, and they got these magazines on the rack there. You know, they get you just as you go out. They peddle razor blades, cigarettes, TV guide, all those little trivial things that they sort of nail you as you're going out of the checkout. Do you know that there's a guy in that supermarket that I know who is the only man I've ever seen who honest to John, by the way, is that the phrase that's used here in the Midwest, honest to John? No, it's not used here in the East. Well, you know, there's an honest John Rocket. You'll hear about honest John one day when it chases you up the Grand Concourse, Dad. 45 light million miles a second. You'll know that the Midwest is still making its imprint on this world, but there's this guy playing the cash register. This guy plays a better cash register, believe me, than many people working at Carnegie Hall play pianos. Fantastic arm movement, great wrist movement. He's bonging it away. And I, you know, it's funny when you talk about, when you talk to somebody about his profession and you say things that show that you really appreciate the fine points. You know, it's like walking up to a ball player and say, you know, I saw what you did there. And he says, what? He expects, the, you know, the usual baseball fan, the home run or the, you know, the belt down the left field foul line. And you say, oh, I saw that pivot, Mac. I saw that. I saw that we need him, too, when he came in there high. Oh, that was good. Well, immediately he'll light up, you know. You see me get him there, right? I got him right in the gizzard. You see that thing there? George, 6 weeks in the hospital on that one. Well, you know, then you're appreciating the fine points of the game, you know. Well, I'm going through this cash register line there, and this guy's going, John, paper's going past the milk. Boing, boing. He's going like a fiend, you know, and I says, listen to that. And he looks up without missing a beat. Says, what do you want, Mac? I say, you are the greatest cash register man I've met in years. It stopped. He said, what'd you say? I said, man, you play that cash register, believe me, like Isaac Stern plays that Guarnerius. And he lit up like a Christmas tree. He says, wait, watch this one now. And then they shoved another. And let me tell you what he said then. He says, you know, he says, I've been playing the cash register here at this slot for 7 years. You're the first guy who's made mention of the fact that I am the best crummy cash register man on the entire east side of New York. And there are 87 million of them. I can cut anybody. And he could. This guy was going, all the other clowns are there, you know, how they scratch and how, hey, Charlie, give me some more ones, will ya? Then they stand around and scratch. All the while, this guy's doing, doing, doing. You're going to hear him next door at the A&P. Well, he's really knocking it off. And then he says, I'll tell you. He says, you know, I made a record. He made a record. And I'll tell you what happened. There was the Naked City Company or some one of these big outfits, you know, the McTV. They came down and they recorded this guy for a half an hour. And now he's on TV all the time. Whenever there's a supermarket scene, you can hear him playing behind. Immortality doesn't come cheap. I tell you, it sure doesn't. You know, and 500 years from now, this guy will still be on reruns. Just as that, you know, that insane maniacal laughter you hear on those terrible comedy shows, those people screaming that idiotic laughter when nothing is going on. You know that kind of stuff. Well, you know that there is a woman who lives in Canton, Ohio, who has sued four different networks. Because her dead husband keeps appearing on the Red Skelton show. And reruns and all. She can hear this clown screaming and yelling and whooping it up. And the whole story is a very sordid story because he was supposed to be at a sales convention in Chicago. When it was originally recorded, actually, he was hollering around and whooping it up here in Manhattan. And he appeared in the crowd at the Red Skelton when they used to hit the whole thing. He was recorded. And this guy died a year and a half later, and he's been on every major comedy show since 1953. His insane, maniacal laughter. Nothing else is left of this poor idiot. Just his laughter. And he's still, he laughs every week at the Dick Van Dyke Show, and that's hard. He laughs every week without missing a beat. That guy is laughing at Leave It to Beaver, which is even worse. Oh, yoy. Leave It to Beaver. Now, you see, she's suing him on the grounds that Harold, had he been alive, would never have laughed at any of that junk, and they're ruining his posthumous reputation. He's laughing away there at this stuff. Yeah, now, of course, I'll tell you. Oh, you want to hear the end of the story about going through the cash register line there? You want to hear why I was confronted there suddenly with a moment of truth? All right. They have these little things there, you know. They have cigarettes, and they have Sneaky Pete, and they have all that stuff when you're going through there. They want to slip into the basket, you know, on the way out, nick you for about three or four extra bucks just before you hit the swinging door, you know. And I'm going through there, and I see this magazine, this one of these, you know, one of these house organ type things, you know, they sell to the ladies there. And it's got this monstrosity on the cover with all these cherries, and it looks like 45 pounds of strawberries and this glop all over the top of it. And I'm standing there with my, you know, there is a certain kind of boredom that you develop after you've come through the lines there. You're just standing, everybody's standing, and I'm standing there, and I'm looking blankly at the cover of this thing, and I suddenly look and I realize what the name of this monster dish is. The name of the dish on the cover of the Family Circle for May 1963 deserves to be reported. It is Divinity Pie. Well, now, I didn't know whether you're supposed to eat this thing or to kneel down in front of it. Perhaps sing a few quick choruses of bringing in the sheaves over this thing. I don't know, you know? There are certain things that you either face or you don't face. One, two, come on, let's go!
My country will always be in England. On the hedgerows, fight them. On the beaches, we'll fight them. On the trees, my God, there'll always be an England. Tonight, the BBC, in consideration of a special England for Englishmen program, present the most significant news item of the week. Dateline Reuters. This is a special program service of the third program, especially created and edited and written for the intelligentsia. Despite cancellation of the project, work is continuing on Britain's Blue Water missile. 300 employees still are turning out fins for the missile. Despite cancellation of the manufacture of the projectile itself, these fins are cut and planed from the solid metal with an accuracy of 0.001 inch, and then passed to official inspectors who carefully examine them under microscopes. Typical British hand production. I can't always be England. How England? After that, these fins are thrown on the factory scrap heap. A British Aircraft Corporation spokesman explains, and we quote him tonight, as an example of an Englishman carrying on the fine traditions of England. It is better for the men's morale if they are working. The program was canceled August 10th, 1962. And even as I speak to you, more fins are being produced. More men are working, and on it goes. By God, how English! This has been a special English broadcast from the third program of the BBC, entitled England for Englishmen. By God, there'll always be an England.
Did you ever have the feeling that you're involved in a fantastic, unimaginable, gigantic, endless, link after link, eternally long Sandy Andy? You know? It's... You know, you almost every game. Are you aware of this? This is a typical example. I can only but stand back and admire England for that sort of thing. Oh, now that of course is not typically English, really. Actually, let's say it is more closely coupled to civilized man. Understands and realizes that this great vast river of boredom, this great vast river of passion flowing on and on and on down to the sea of eternity, must. Time to time, crash against the rocks, the reefs of realism, smashing and creating a great rift of foam as it rises higher and higher. Tote that bar, lift that veil, my God, get a little drunk in your landing chair. Nothing like a timpani. Will you please repeat that timpani for me, please, there? Will you please repeat that timpani there? There's nothing more exciting than a timpani. Now, listen carefully to the timpanis there. It's your wrist. You got to get plenty of wrist action in there. And keep your feet wide apart, knees loose. All right, ready to go now? Listen, here we go. You know, I'm always intrigued by the view. Just keep that up there, Edward. I'm intrigued by the view of man that man carries around inside his, let's say, his cosmic wallet, where he's got this picture of himself. Now, of course, I'm speaking of man in the metaphorical sense here. This will appear on later programs, in case any of you are interested in taking notes. This will also appear on the exam. Now, we're only 4 weeks away. I'm thinking of having an exam for the show. Would you guys like to take an exam? We'll have the exam for Shepherdiana. We'll say, what did Uncle Fred say to Aunt Min on the occasion of the big hot dog roast out in the forest preserve? This must be answered within 10% of accuracy. Exact words are not necessarily that, but the gist of what he said must be contained in your answer. True and false. Did Uncle Fred own an Essex? Oh, you sure laid an egg on that one. You know, speaking of eggs, I'm always intrigued, though, by the difference between what we are and what we like to think we are. Now, just listen very carefully to this. You know, man's creations far outstrip himself. Now, he likes to consider the creation that he has created as representative of him. Yeah, you follow what I'm saying there? Now, like Beethoven writes Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. Now, you heard Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, this gigantic reaching for the heavens, reaching for the eternal meanings of things. Where Schiller wrote the poetry, and you got a heavenly chorus singing there, and everything's booming out. And there are four pimply-faced little guys watching it and thinking about it and saying, that's just the way it is. It's just the way I feel sometimes. Oh, and a pig's ear. Just the way I feel. Is there one of you, just raise your hand, just one of you, who can stand up to this? Just one. Just one of you. Is there one of you who can walk in the shadow of this piece of tripe? Well, if this is tripe, guess what you are? Well, that's right. Listen to this. Boy, can't you just see us all marching with our armor flashing in the sun? Great banners flying. Our chargers rearing. On 6th Avenue. Past the Life Building. Yeah. Oh, here we go. Down into the IRT entrance. All together now. Down to the IRT entrance. And now we're going past the subway change room. All of mankind is marching in the shadow of his own creation. We are now fishing in our pocket for a quarter. And now we buy our token. Hold it there now. Wait a minute. That turnstile is stuck. Now we move a little to the right. Into the slot it goes. And now we're on the platform. The platform of life. Waiting for the great A-train of eternity. To carry us to the great paradise of that eternal Bronx in the sky.
at the throttle. Look at him now. A good TWU worker. One of Mike Quill's boys is bringing in that double-A train. Yes, it's taken us to that great Bronx in the sky. That great grand concourse in heaven. Oh, boy. I guess every guy, no matter where he lives, speaking of silly things, this is WOR AM and FM New York. And I guess no matter where a guy lives, no matter where he lives, he always pictures heaven as an extension of that. As nutty as it sounds. I'm sure if I were to rush up to a guy, you know, he's fooling around, let's say, along Fordham Road there. He's out in front of the big fist fight that's going on in front of Alexander's all the time because they're having this big special on doilies, you know. And he's out there and they're yelling and hollering. He's waiting for he's waiting for a train to take him down to 59th Street, and they're screaming and yelling and whistles are blowing and stuff. And I come up and I grab him real quick. You see, you got to get him real fast. You say, "Dad, quick, describe heaven." He'd say, "Fordham Road." Uh-oh, I said, "Oh, no, actually, no, wait a minute, stop there." Now, I see it as the great billowing clouds, and there's a thing there, and there's a big pearly gates open up, and it's air-conditioned. Well, yeah, there's a lot of things going on underneath the surface. Speaking of things here, we have some commercials. Ed, why don't you play the E.T.? Go on, let those guys.
What is what?
That. A book.
How can it be a book? It's full of cartoons.
Oh, come on, Ed. We heard that. No, it's hold on, Ed. It's a Pfeiffer cartoon book here. We don't want Pfeiffer to have this. He doesn't need this. Come on, now, you fellas. Come on. Singing commercial. Come on. Let's sneak it in there.
It must be an adult comic book.
Yeah, by Pfeiffer.
It's all about man trying to communicate with each other, you know.
It's just called Holden. Is it only Pfeiffer in there? I mean,
it's very complicated, you know, communicating. Everybody laughed today is called a satirist. You know, I remember it was so sad. I heard this old worn out Borscht Circuit comic the other day, introduced on a radio program as one of America's pioneer satirists, which meant that he was a comic before they discovered Mort Saul. Well, anyway, we've got Hold Me Here, which is a Random House book, and it's by Pfeiffer, and I think you'll find it somewhat of a gas. And it's $1.95. Don't worry, baby. I know. I've got a clock built in me. We have here Paper Book Gallery now. Yeah, if you're going to buy a copy of Hold Me, pick it up at the Paper Book Gallery while you're on the subject. To see the special prints, tell them you're my friend. Okay, $1. And this is at the Paper Book Gallery, 399 6th Avenue. And they have a lot of paper books and fist fights and things. And we have here, we have a couple of more. Mandarin. Hey, listen, one more thing. A specific thing. If you're going to, we assume you're going to try a restaurant in the next month or so. I'm not being funny. The Mandarin House is a magnificent restaurant. Believe me, both of them. They really are. Bazooka's going off as a great peace demonstration. I saw a big peace demonstration like that in East Berlin one time, and I got my shirt tail burned. It was wild. There is nothing more dynamic nor more fist fighting than peace these days. You notice that? It's a very dynamic force. If you want to see this, this is the Naval Air Station, Lakehurst, New Jersey, the giant power for peace. Here you can hear all about peace. Modern jets, latest Navy helicopters, armed forces' newest weapons in the world's largest wooden hangar, a portable field hospital, Marine Corps firepower demonstration. That's a lot of shooting, in case you're interested in what a firepower is. Comparison of World War II small arms versus the really good modern weapons. Whew. When I remember what the World War II weapons did, wow, I can hardly wait to see the new peace weapons. It's very wonderful, all this peace, though. I just love it. I remember the first time should I describe to you the first time that I crouched down when I'll just tell you a little scene about modern weapons. This is an ancient weapon, as a matter of fact. This guy came in, and we're all standing around. You see, at this point, we are all carrying wooden guns. You know that a lot of guys, when they were first dragged into the army, were given wooden guns. And we stood around with wooden guns, you know. And we assumed that the Germans had wooden guns, too. There were a lot of German T-5s that were nearsighted and had bad uniforms and everything, too, which is probably what happened. That's the only thing that saved us. But, of course, there is a phrase. the Army had a great phrase for that. You know, a lot of people think that we won because of Eisenhower or something else like that, or great bombers or something. The Army knew why we won. As a matter of fact, the Army always had a phrase, as we're slugging along, we're slopping along, and the stuff is up to our knees, our blooming knickers, and the CO can't find his way. We are lost back at the post theater, you know. We're trying to get back from the rifle range, and everything is going to pieces. Somebody would say, well, it's a good thing that the Germans are more than we are. That was censored, which is really why we lost. The Germans said that. We didn't say anything. We just stood there with square jaws and pretended it was because we were good people, you know, intrinsically more talented. Well, while on the subject of that, you want to hear about that scene? We're all standing around. I'll never forget the first time I really got scared right out of my shoes. We are standing around, and this corporal comes in and says, all right, today, you men are going to be part of a special fire demonstration of a special new weapon that is highly classified. I don't want any of you men talking about this when you get into town in Neosho. As if you could ever talk to any of the natives of Neosho, Missouri, about anything other than money. I mean, you know. I don't want any of you men to talk about this, but we have picked you men as being a special group of men who have made a particularly high rating on the rifle range to demonstrate before the assembled three-battalion group the new weapons that will be issued to the Army in particular instances of tactical importance. Now, all you men, mark off by counting on threes. All right, face, out you go. Well, all right, so we march out. I'm one of them. There were about nine of us. I tell you, this was really my entrance into showbiz. I'll tell you how it worked. This is truly. So they march us out. They take us to this range, and it's a big range, a long, big range, and it has a great big parapet in back of it. Huge, like a little mountain built by people, you know, back of it. And it has a couple of things way down. It looks like a million miles away, you know, the stuff that we're supposed to shoot at. And we didn't know what we were supposed to shoot. And with that, along came a captain, a major, a colonel, 14 T-5s, a sergeant, and about three corporals. All marched along, came in, they had a truck and everything. They started to unload this stuff. And they had a PA system which was operating. The colonel got on and said, men, the men that you see before you have been specially selected and have been brought out here to fire one of the Army's newest tactical weapons. This weapon is to be used in anti-tank warfare. And in certain tactical experiences, it can also be used for anti-personnel. Now, the reason, that means anti-people. I mean, that's a polite word of saying just guys walking around in shoes, you know. Anti-personnel. Now, we have especially selected these men who have never seen this weapon before to show you about the comparative ease and simplicity of this new weapon. This new weapon will now be issued, and after the fire demonstration is over, we will have a demonstration for all of you, during which time questions will be asked and answers, I hope, will be forthcoming. All right, men, are you all ready? Of course, we nod. And that point, they break out these boxes. This was highly, highly secret, very, very secret. At this point now, you probably think you always heard of this weapon. But at the point that I am discussing, this weapon was never heard of, had never been seen before. We're standing, we don't know what the heck's going to happen. We're just standing. All of us had fired on the range. We'd all been checked out on various types of small arms, like 45s, Thompson submachine guns, that kind of stuff. Yeah, these are all small arms. And they had these boxes, and they open them up, and there's a couple of MPs standing by there, and they look us all over. Of course, we've all been checked out. We're standing, and he hands me what looked like a long piece of stovepipe. It weighed about 4 ounces, you know, just a long piece of pipe. With that, a corporal from I think he was a corporal of engineers or ordnance or something, came over, and he said, all right, he said, I'm going to show you guys how to fire this thing now. This weapon is called an anti-rocket or anti-tank rocket launcher. It's sometimes used as anti-personnel, like the colonel said there. Now, it fires a rocket. I said, you guys are used to firing guns, you know, with bullets. He says, the difference between a bullet and a rocket you will see immediately upon firing. He said, no, this is a two-man weapon. Now, the way it works is this. And I'm standing there with this guy named Smitty. It was a guy who was hanging around with me, and he had these big, thick GI glasses. We're both standing with our mouths hanging open. He says, now, look. He says, here, you. And he grabs Smitty. He says, here, Smitty, you are going to be the primer. Now, what you do is that you take this rocket. Now, here's the rocket. And he takes this little thing out, and it's got little fins on it. It looks like, I'll tell you what it looked like. It looked like a little Buck Rogers spaceship kind of thing, a very innocent little thing. Yes, it did, like the kind of thing you wind up and it runs around on the floor, you know. Makes little dinging sounds, and little sparks come out of the back. Well, he says, now, what we do is you drop it in. And he said, now, here, what's your name? I said, Shepard. He said, all right, Shepard. He said, you put this on your shoulder, and you sight it this way. And so we're sighting. He says, now, see, very simple, just like that. And he said, now, this is fired electrically, so there is no recoil at all. You don't feel any recoil at all. It's a rocket. And be careful. He said, hey, you, what's your name? Smitty. All right, Smitty, when you drop this thing in, you get out from behind and get behind Shepard. Get away from him. Get by the other side. I said, what? You don't want to get away from him. He says, yes. He says, because it has a very strong discharge in the back. And all the stuff shoots out the back. You just hang on to it there and point it. And he said, don't try for any windage on these first practice shots. He said, each of you are going to fire three rockets. He said, you will have a radio-operated tank, which will come out here. Radio-operated tank? It's a radio-operated tank? Because, you know, gee. Well, sure enough, I got this thing on my shoulder, and this big ring, you know. It's got big ring sights. So, you know, I'm looking at you. You know, it looks like the kind of sights that they used to have on G8 and his battle aces. You remember those things where it shows the guy riding in his SPAD, and he's looking at Baron von Richthofen's plane. You see it through these big ring sights. There, it's a big ring sights. I felt really great. You know, I got my helmet on the top there and all that stuff. I got a hold of this thing, and it's got a little trigger on the back. He says, when you press the trigger, what it does really is just a switch. He says, just a switch. It completes the electrical contact. He says, now you, Smitty, when you get back there, you do this. He says, you have to actually you have to prime it. You have to actually wire it. See, when it gets back there, you throw these wires over, and then it's ready to go. Up to that point, Shepard can't fire it.
Okay.
So the colonel is up there on the thing there, and we're about five of us now got these bazookas. They're called bazookas. So we got these things landing out there, and we see coming from the left, way off, about like, you know, way off down there somewhere, we see this thing go, gong, 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 gong. That's the way a tank sounds. It goes, that's a tank. Well, this tank is coming along from the left, you see, and it's going along. And it's radio controlled. For some reason or other, I felt sorry for it. It's this little tank going, because it wasn't shooting back. It comes along, then it's got a turret, and it's moving along about 5 miles an hour. So the colonel then gets on the PA system. We don't know what's going to happen. None of us know how this thing is going to work. You know, we don't know. The colonel, he says, just fire. He says, take just a slight lead, like an inch and a half, just a little bit. He said, this goes real quick. So, and the colonel, all right, man, you will notice that this is a two-man weapon. You will notice that there are two men that are about to fire this weapon, which we call a rocket launcher M12 personnel. The man in the rear of the rocket launcher will prime the weapon with a rocket, which we will now show you. Corporal, would you please hold the rocket up so all the other men can see what these soldiers are about to fire? Well, he holds up the rocket, and everybody is standing in the background there with their helmets on, not knowing what's going to happen. He holds it up.
And now, you will notice downrange, you will notice a T-3 tank is now moving into it. That's the M-3, which is an obsolete tank. However, the actual action of this weapon can be demonstrated on this type of vehicle. This is a radio-operated tank. When we are about to fire, I want all of you men to lie prone. Lie prone on the ground. We will give you the instructions for you to lie prone. And at that point, the men who are on the firing line we'll listen very carefully for the fire signal. Are you ready there on the right?
All of us look up there, yeah. You know, ready. Smitty's glasses are sweating up. And by now, I'm beginning to get a little worried because he tells all these guys who are about 75 yards behind us to lie down. You know, and I look back and all these guys are lying flat. There I'm up in front. I realize it's showbiz, you know. The next step, I'd have been Mary Martin. And so I'm standing there, you know, beginning to work up a sweat in this old tank. He says,
all right, now, will the operator of the radio operator tank please send the tank across the range and then proceed to maneuver the tank.
The tank starts to go. And it's right now right in the middle of the range, and the tank is starting to move around. It's making little circles and stuff. And I'm watching it through my little sight. See, I'm moving back and forth with this thing. I've got it leveled on this thing. Of course, you know, up to that point, like I say, we've been firing little carbines. Like carbines, it's like throwing little rocks at sparrows and stuff. And, you know, just some little fun things. Colonel looks down. He says, all right, men, when you are ready, fire your weapons. With that, the colonel goes flat, lays there with his hat pulled down over his ears and looks out, peeks out. And I'm looking down. And I feel Smitty drops his thing and clunk. I hear it go in down there. Smitty says, I pushed the button there. It's okay. It's all wired now. And he runs around and he's laying down. I got this thing right in my sight when suddenly the guy to my left lets fly. He's about 20 yards away, and I hear, whoo! I hear this thing go, whoo! And then I go, press, whoo! There's this funny feeling. It just sort of pushes me sideways just the slightest bit. And for one instant, there's nothing but a large flame in front of me. Whoo! And then I see this wild little sight. It goes, whoo, 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 whoo. It makes about 17 revolutions in a counterclockwise fashion. Are you aware the bazooka doesn't go directly? It goes, whoo, 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 boom. And we're all standing there. And you see a little wisp of smoke, and the tank is in... Well, it's just a sham, just holes there, you know. The top of the tank is blown open. The poor little turret is hanging sideways. And this thing I've got in my hand weighs about a pound and a half. Just a little pipe. And all the guys are slowly getting up back there. And then the colonel says, you have just seen a special demonstration of a highly secret and a very highly classified weapon. I don't want any of you men to go into Neosho tonight and talk about it. I would like to tell you, however, that the weapon you have just seen demonstrated is a weapon that has been in use in many units of the German Army. This weapon in the German Army is being used, however, not necessarily as an anti-tank weapon, but is being used primarily as an anti-personnel weapon. And now, Corporal, will you please pick up the rocket launchers? And the demonstration is over. Company commanders, take over. Oh. The guy comes and he takes my little stovepipe away. I look down and the tank is still smoking. We form back up in columns of four, and we start clunking back to Company K's central headquarters, which consisted of an old piano, two pool tables, and a crap table. And we start marching back. carrying our Boer War Enfield rifles hanging over one shoulder. And you see, it's just a march formation, you know, we're sort of, and it was the first and the only time I ever saw three companies completely marching at ease and nobody saying anything. We're just sort of clunking along. Just clunking. No, I think that's all right. Hold it there. That, by the way, that weapon, in case you're interested, is now obsolete. They got better ones than that, I understand. Just thought you ought to know that many things are brewing. So, don't miss the big peace demonstration. And now, while we're on the subject of that, the strange moments of things that are created. I really do, I believe. I think, for example, I think the carvings on the side of Mount Rushmore says more about what we think we are than anything we've ever written about what we think we are. If you were to place an order now for a gigantic stainless steel statue, you know, I know a place in Jersey where they have a lot of surplus stainless steel, gigantic chunks of stainless steel that were surplus from the Army. You know, did you know that the Army, during one period of its existence in World War II, had worked out a scheme, a noiseless, silent weapon to be used at night? It was a 74-foot stainless steel slingshot. Yes. And it had a concrete base. You set it up, and it had a winch. And I'm telling you the truth. There were four of them made. It had a winch, and you would pull it way back, and you'd put rocks in it. And they figured, they figured that if a big rock came out of the sky, the enemy would think that God is after him and would soon give up. Well, the only trouble is this weapon proved to be very impractical because it was highly, highly inaccurate. And so after three divisions of U.S. infantry got bombarded with boulders near Fort Benning, and 74 guys went AWOL thinking that God was finally making a statement, they put this thing on the surplus market. And yes, it's the truth, and I know where two of these enormous stainless steel slingshots are now available. And if we all submitted a buck together, we could, if necessarily, we could buy this thing. I think it would be a wonderful thing to have. You know, we could set it up at Times Square and make an enormous peace demonstration. You know where they have that big wastebasket down there where it says keep your city clean? Well, I know of a great way to keep a city clean. I don't think it's the paper, the waste paper around the city that makes the city dirty. I think it's the people. I think they're pretty dirty, rotten people, a lot of them. Oh, yeah, a lot of terrible people. Now, I would like to submit this to you. Who would you most like to be seen shot out of the stainless steel slingshot at Times Square as a gigantic promotional message for peace out over Jersey? Now, I think it would be a wonderful thing. There's a lot of very important people who would do anything for promotion. And just think, we could accomplish two birds with one stone. Can't you see Elsa Maxwell flying out over, let's say, Plainfield, New Jersey, trailing an enormous banner saying, work for peace? And she's got sparklers in both hands. She'd do it. I know she'd do it. Now, this is just a suggestion. I don't want to influence your vote. I know a half a dozen people I'd like to see, and we could have a big thing. We could do it on Sunday afternoon, have a lot of folk singers down there, have a lot of demonstrators. We could have Wagner down to talk a little bit, maybe get a telegram from Kennedy, and, you know, have the whole bit. Arthur Schlesinger would show up on a scene. The Post would be down there. CBS would have a newsreel camera, you know, for the late light. We had Ron Cochran have to say something about it. And we'd have everything out there, and then at the precise moment, we could have, say, Mary Martin cut the ribbon for peace. And poof! And out she goes, or he, or whoever it is you'd like to see. Maybe Mary Martin herself. It would make a very nice peace emissary flying out of her Trenton. See, we could have her. To me, it would have to be done at sunset. Because there's something very romantic about sunset. I could see, for example, Jack Parr spread-eagled against the setting sun, trailing an enormous banner and trailing sparks. And, you know, it's a bird and it's a plane. I think this has great merit. Now, who would you like to see shot out as a gesture towards humanity, mankind? Think seriously. Anybody got a suggestion? We'll put it on right away. You've only got 30 seconds. The suggestions are running out. As a matter of fact, I might even consider it. I wouldn't mind flying out over, say, Hackensack, doing a few slow rolls and a few snap rolls and a couple of barrel rolls, you know. Do an Immelman out over... I'd like to do a couple of Immelmans over T-neck, you know. And drop leaflets. Drop leaflets in favor of integration, you know, something like that. What? Well, I can't hear anything. That's the whole business of radio studios. They're soundproof. And you know, you got very nice teeth. But outside of that, I've got nothing else. But these are suggestions. I'm not tipping. Leonard Bernstein, oh, beautiful, yes. And we could give him two golden batons. And these batons, you see, would contain a season pass to the Lincoln Center. And as he drops them at random over various cities as he passes, it would make a wonderful souvenir of the great peace movement that is now taking place in America. Bernstein would be very good. As a matter of fact, we could have stereo all set up there, and you see, we'd have the Beethoven's Fifth Symphony and have some Morton Gould played, you know, as a counterpoint. No, he's not that silly. They completely missed the point. No. Who would you most like to... Yeah, Bernstein would be pretty good. I can see Bernstein. Robert Moses would be fantastic. I mean, Moses could be... That great highway in the sky, that great, great superhighway, that enormous turnpike to heaven, you know? And it would be his last great public gesture to be shot right into Teaneck.